The reading this morning is a poem by Langston Hughes, Let America Be America. And the version I am reading to you is an adaptation of the original poem. And this adaptation was done by Marlon Lavenhar, who is the minister at the church in the larger church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. When I visited that church 15 years ago, they had, I think, 1,200 members. Since then, they have welcomed into their congregation part of an African-American church because the African-American church split when the minister of that church realized that he was actually a Universalist. Mary Doan is testifying at the piano. It happens, she says. And so now they have three or four services on Sunday morning, ranging in tone and cultural context widely. So if you ever want to have a different experience of Unitarian Universalism, we can arrange a field trip to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet and yet must be. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. America was never America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be the great, strong land of love, where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme, that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me nor freedom in this homeland of the free. All the songs we've sung and all the hopes we've held and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay except the dream that almost died today. Ah, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet and yet must be, the land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man's, the Native Americans, African Americans, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me. And yet I swear this oath, America will be. You know the story of that long ago rabbi who we know by the name Jesus, who was trying to reform the way his people practiced their religion. He was frustrated with the legalisms, and he was also caught by the rule of the Roman Empire. He was a man who was trying to live a big life in a tight spot. And so he befriended other people who were in tight spots. And so you probably remember the story of the woman who was brought before him to be stoned for adultery. This is one of those stories that is often quoted, or at least one or two lines from it, without us always remembering the whole story. You probably know the famous line, "Let the one among you who is without sin be the first to cast a stone." And you probably also remember how the crowd all has to slink off because none of them can claim to be without, let us say, transgressions. In the story, the part you may not remember is that during most of this, Jesus is scratching something in the sand with his finger, as if he's paying sort of half attention to this dramatic event going on before him. There is lots of speculation in the literature about what in the world he is scratching into the sand. That, of course, is lost to time. I think the genius of the moment is that because he does not stand up and stare at everyone while they search their hearts, he can say this pretty challenging thing and then look down and let it worm its way into the soul of each person in the crowd. And then they can each conclude by wrestling with their own souls that no, they cannot claim to be perfect. They cannot claim that they have not done things to harm another, have not done things that are immoral, have not done things that they wish they hadn't done. And after they've left, he looks up at the woman there, brought before him to be stoned, and says to her, "Oh, where are they?" As if he himself had not heard the gravel sliding under each of the quietly retreating footsteps. And when she says, "I don't know, they left," he says, "Well, all right. I don't condemn you either. Go on with your life and don't do this again." He doesn't ask her to do anything more to atone for the sin that she committed. He did ask the crowd to publicly confess that they too had done things that they shouldn't have or wished they hadn't or that were maybe harmful in the world. He does it gently in a way. He lets people claim it for themselves, and he doesn't make them name it in front of everyone, which is what we have done today by sharing our litany. We have said, "Oh, yes, we too are among the people who can't throw stones." I appreciate this story about this radical rabbi because it doesn't let anybody off the hook. And it doesn't allow anyone to be condemned and set apart from humanity. It puts us all in the middle ground of having to understand ourselves, having to understand how to work with each other, and having to understand how to make a world together. It is our work as a religious community to see the fullness of life, to see the transgressions that we carry, the contradictions we embody, the blind spots that we see suddenly and think, "Oh, I've been doing that for how long?" We see ourselves with our failings and our triumphs all at the same time. It's hard to hold those together. And that's the work of religious community. It is our great spiritual, emotional, and communal work to hold the fullness, to hold the stumbling and the unknown, to lean away from the knowing and into the love, into the work of deciding that being connected is more important than feeling secure or good enough or justified. In our moment in time, the transgression that is kicking up the dust, well, they're all connected, but racism is the one that's really being clearly articulated right now in our country in particular, but I think we see it around the world, certainly in the response to the Syrian refugees. And part of being able to say, oh, it is us too. Part of being able to face the racism that each of us carries. Facing the pain of the Syrian refugees is to lean away from knowing what to do, from knowing the answer. To lean away from defending the way we see the world and just let our love for humanity shine. Let that spark of recognition that's always there be our guide. And that means forgiving ourselves and offering forgiveness freely to those around us. And leaning into the not knowing means you can't know how to take on the whole of it. If you think about it as an entire system, you don't get out of bed. So not knowing means figuring out what's one next thing. So I say, forgive me for reading too narrow a collection of poets and thinkers to you. I have been reading to you poetry and philosophy and religion that is very white. The authors are wise and deeply spiritual and very white, which is fine. Being white is fine. And it's not enough if you're going to talk about the wisdom of the world. So this year I am going to and have begun to intentionally seek out poetry and readings, children's stories by and about people of color. And they'll be part of the service, and I'll put a little bit of information in the order of service for you periodically about the author or the reading so that we hear some different voices and gain a little bit different perspective in this room where we gather to find our centers and stretch our arms wide. The authors will not all be writing about racism, but we will be encountering the racism that we carry, whether we want to or not, by listening to those voices. So sometimes it will be explicitly about racism, but mostly it will be about being human, because that's what we share. This is part of my atonement for the fact that as a white middle-class woman in America, I can forget to listen to some voices, which means that my worldview is composed in a certain way that is partial. And that's how it shows up in our liberal, aware, activist lives. The things that we just forget to notice. The experiences we cannot be aware of. And yet we've become more aware recently, and so I'll follow that light. And I don't know how it will change things, but it seems like a good thing to follow. And Rosh Hashanah teaches us as we do a little bit more, we can make amends, we can atone for transgressions, and that no one has to be stoned. We inherited a broken system. We are all living in a tight spot. And so we all get to figure out how to move a little bit within that. You've got a little bit of information with your order of service today about two other chances to move a little bit in this particular spot. A chance to walk and a chance to read one of those voices. Doing those things gives us a chance to atone. And of course, if you take the word atone apart a little bit, it says at one. At one. Something we have not yet been, but will be.